Hello, and welcome to the Art of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane, and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop, and trust your intuition through interviews with other guests and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to The Art of Intuition. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for this podcast. And we've had a little bit of a fun old morning this morning. Actually, my guest isn't in the morning. My guest is in the afternoon and I'm in the morning. And consequently, we got a little bit mixed up here. But he's here and his name is Christian and he's got books out. He's done everything, TEDx talks, everything. And the thing that we're going to be talking about is all about our soul power. So we're going to free ourselves from these self-sabotaging behaviors and Christian's going to help us. But I'm not going to do the big spiel on Christian. He's going to do it for me. So welcome to the podcast, Christian.
Hi, Susan. I'm so glad we finally got it worked out. Thank you.
Yeah, as you said, Mercury.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get stuck straight into it. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, your background and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, all in 2 minutes, right?
No, you got to be longer than that.
Well, I was born in Cuba and I was raised in the U.S. most of my life. Last 20 years in California, then 10 years after that in Miami, where my family still is. I've been doing this kind of personal transformation work for over 30 years. And have been doing retreats and, up until the pandemic, of course, retreats and workshops on different themes with, you know, like how to do relationships consciously, personal empowerment. This work specifically with women, around women's empowerment, life purpose. And I'm also a breath worker, so I've been using that as a healing modality for a long time as well.
Okay. So what you said you've been doing for 30 years, like the spiritual work. What was there a particular trigger that moved you into this, or did it just sort of evolve naturally? I mean, I know it does evolve naturally, but usually there's some sort of a trigger that starts it.
Yeah, I think a couple of triggers, but I think the most recent, the most important one was, I think it was approaching, you know, one of those big numbers in life where I began to question what I was doing with life. And I had a very enviable life. I had a nice cushy job and an apartment on the bay in Miami Beach. I had sought after socially, professionally, and yet it seemed to me that the more I had and the more that I was sought after and the more quote-unquote successful that I was, that there was something missing. And in my early 20s, I had kind of thrown the baby out with the baptismal water. And so I realized that that's the part of me that I was wanting to reconnect with. And because I had confused religion, and I was born in a very Catholic family. And so once I realized that religion didn't have room for me, I kind of threw the baby out with the water. And then realized later that, you know, there's a difference between religion and spirituality in that spiritual part of me is just an inherent part of who I am, of who we all are. And so that began the process of exploring with Eastern religions and meditation, breath work. I was in an ashram, you know, in a kind of Hindu / Buddhist ashram for 5 years in my early 30s.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's wow, because that's something I've always wanted to do. And I feel like I'm getting too old for it now. But how did that go? And I want to ask you about breath work, but that's in a minute because I've got lots of questions. But yeah, how was that being in the ashram for 5 years?
I'm really glad for the experience. I'm very grateful for it. I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for that. But I got to tell you, Susan, I wouldn't do it again, at least in the form that I did it. It was incredibly intense. It was the hardest thing I've ever done, because every day for 5 years, I had to surrender my perceptions, my preferences, my desires to the sacred, but through this person of this human, this guru. And that was incredibly difficult to do. I mean, the end result is great, because a really deep sense of surrender was happening in me, and I learned so much. But I wouldn't want to go through that again.
Yeah, that is a little bit. I didn't see it that way. I saw it in the meditation and the, you know, all the nice fluffy stuff that goes with it. But yeah, there's a lot of deep stuff that's happening in that sort of area, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, man. And you can do an ashram, you know, go for a month and just study meditation and eat healthy food. Sure. You can do that.
That would probably be more me.
But the way that I was doing it was like, I walked out of my life. I quit my job and sold my condo and broke up with my partner at the time. And just, I dove deep. I went on a deep spiritual journey.
Whoa. Okay. Whereas I sort of did mine while I was living the life. So mine took a lot longer than 5 years. But yeah. Oh, okay. Wow. That is a big change. Oh, my God. Okay.
Let me give you this for contest. Because if you would have told me that I was going to be celibate, well, mostly celibate for 5 years,
yeah,
I would have laughed or cried. I don't know which. And that wasn't even the hardest part of it. Not even close.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I didn't even think about that side of it either. Yeah. Probably wouldn't have lasted 5 years. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's really good. And before we go any further too, Christian's website is on the screen, but for the podcast, it is soulfulpower.com. So soulfulpower.com. If you want to connect with Christian, go that way. I'm going to leave it on the screen for a bit longer because there's a lot more we want to talk about, obviously. All right. Now, so when we're talking about freeing ourselves from self-sabotaging behaviors, I don't want to go to an ashram for 5 years. So there's got to be an easier or a different way. I'm not necessarily easier, I can assure you, but a different way. So let's start to have a look at that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, of course you don't have to go to an ashram for 5 years. Like my book will, I mean, it's a huge step towards that. You're still, I mean, whoever the book will like spell it out. It'll walk the reader by the hand, understanding how the mind works, how the ego mind works. And understanding all the ways that it sabotages us, understanding all the way that it limits us, and it's a big conversation to have in this setting, but here's a great, just a simple way of understanding it. It's a visual way. If you put a football or a baseball, any kind of a ball in the center of a stadium, that's what the ego is. It's a part of us that it's our sense of individual personality. Just in the simplest way of thinking about it, who we are is actually the stadium, and we've allowed this tiny, tiny, tiny part of who we are to think that it is all who we are, and to make really important, significant, consequential choices from its very small, limited, and always fear-based perspective. So if we want to have a chance of having relationships that can work, if we want to have a sense of fulfillment, of personal empowerment, we've got to understand the ego. That's the first step, because that's the source of all our problems and the source of all our suffering. So I spent the first probably third of the book getting into that, and I designed the book in a very intentional way. So short chapters, because I know how busy and everybody is, and I know what an ADD society we live in. So short attention span, so short chapters. But the difference is that I have homework. I have like two or three questions at the end of each chapter that are designed to turn us inward, to internalize, to apply those teachings to ourselves, so they don't stay at the level of information, because we don't need more information. You know this, Susan. We've got information overload. What we need is transformation, and that only comes when we integrate those teachings and really apply them to ourselves. So I tell people, don't rush through the book. Read a short chapter each week, but do the practices, because that's where the change is. And that's where we start getting self-aware about our patterns and why we do the things we do, and in what kind of relationships do we give our power away? Is it in romantic, intimate, sexual relationships, or is it in with authority figures? Is it with family and friends? It's like the book can't answer that for you, but it'll ask the right questions so that we can begin to see ourselves through that prism, and then begin to see all those self-defeating behaviors so that we can cut it out.
Okay, now why I've jumped back on screen is because you're talking about your book, which is wonderful, and it's called Awakening the Soul Power. However, we haven't actually told anybody, because you've got it on your screen. Everyone can see that that's the name of the book, but the podcast, they can't see that. So I needed to jump in and say Christian's book, which is available at Amazon, is called Awakening the Soul Power. So let's just go in a little bit further about that, because one of the things, I'll be totally open and honest here. When I was looking at some of the information you had and was looking at the book and, getting an understanding of what I wanted to talk about in the podcast, mm-hmm. I have to be honest, and the word power kept on coming up, and it started to sort of not resonate with me, started to sort of go, everything's about power, power, power. And I started to think, well, hang on, is that the ego talking, just like you're saying? So I was taking this word, power, and flipping it and giving it a negative connotation. Yes. And I think this is part of these self-sabotaging behaviours that you're talking about, is the fact that we take on some of these things and we put our own spin on it. And like I said, I'm looking at all your websites and everything else. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this guy's really good, but the word power is right in my face. Can we just of course the book is called Awakening the Soul Power, so maybe that's where this is matching up somewhere.
That's hilarious. Thank you so much for being so honest and real about that. Yeah, because that's the thing. We are so conditioned to have negative responses to that word power, and our relationship to powers is imbued with layers and layers of conditioning. We have an ambivalent relationship to power. Like, part of us wants it, part of us is afraid of it, it's terrified of it. And what we think, I think what we fear might happen if we really stepped into our power, into our personal power, is that other people wouldn't be able to handle it, and that we might end up rejected and alone, and who wants that? We also fear that we might abuse it, and no wonder. Like that's one of the worst connotations that we have with associations we have with that word. Power is a bad thing. Power is negative. How many abuses of power have we witnessed? All we got to do is turn on the news any given day to witness at least one of them. Not to mention all the ones we've experienced in our personal lives. And so we've all and words like expressions like power corrupts. An absolute power corrupts absolutely. What they didn't tell us about that quote, though, is that Lord Acton was speaking specifically about political power, not personal power. So when you put all that stuff into a mix and you add to that mix the fact that we've been conditioned to make the emotions weakness, we hate conflict, we avoid confrontation like the plague, we're terrified of rocking the boat. So you put all that together, what happens is that we end up giving our power away. Our innate, inherent power that nobody can give to us, nobody can take away. We are the only ones who give it away. And the sad part, the tragic part, is the reasons that we give our power away. Because what happens is that we end up overriding our truth. We end up saying yes when inside we really feel no, for an illusion of security. We end up like stuffing ourselves into smaller little packages, into tight little boxes that are not going to be threatening to anybody. We play small. We settle for less, for a false sense of acceptance, and for morsels, crumbs of pseudo love. Because if we're not presenting ourselves authentically as who we are, how can we, anything that we get in return is not going to be authentic either. So it's not even real love that we're getting back. So it begins to, and that all connects to how we sabotage ourselves and our relationships. It's very much connected to our relationship to power and our lack of authenticity. And so the message of the book is that there is a way that we can step into power. that has nothing to do with fear, with force, with manipulation, with hierarchy, with force, right? Those are all the negative associations we have with power, that there's a way that we can step into our power in a way that is congruent with who we are, with the goodness in our hearts, that doesn't require that we push anybody down, step on them, in order for us to feel powerful. And that's what the book walks the reader through.
Wow, that's amazing. And isn't it funny, just one single word can create such a difference, you know, in how we're looking at it. Because you are correct. Power, when I think about power, I do think of external power and what it can, you know, the effect it can have on me. And so when we're looking at things like that, straight away I'm going into those self-sabotaging beliefs and those self-sabotaging aspects of myself and stopping from going forward. So that's really, really interesting. When you're talking about, I think I'd like to go further, a little bit deeper into the relationship side of it, because it seems to affect us more in the relationship side where we're happy to, or not happy, we willingly give over our power.
Yeah.
I know with my past relationship, I willingly did that without realizing it. And when you were saying, you know, you can hear your voice going, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. And then what do you do? Oh, yes, you can do that. You do the complete opposite.
Right.
Yeah, so I get that. And these are those self-sabotaging things that I want to narrow down a little bit more, but especially in relationships. I know they happen at work and they happen in the community, like we're supposed to do this and supposed to do that. But when it becomes a relationship and it's so close, it's usually got a lot more heart attachment, hasn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I haven't done a scientific study, but you know, based on years of doing retreats on that theme of personal empowerment, I would say the majority, most of us, tend to give our power away in that area, right? In the romantic, intimate, sexual relationships, because that's what's closest to our deepest identity issue. That's where all that stuff gets triggered. And yeah, not only do we sabotage ourselves, but we sabotage our own relationships. Sometimes even before the get-go, even before we get started with them, by falling for, and of course, all of this is done subconsciously, right? By falling for, by attracting people who are not available. You know, they're already with somebody else. They live on the other side of the country or the world. They're just not there emotionally. Or they're not a match. You know, they're not, doesn't mean we're better, doesn't mean we're worse. That means we're just at different points. We're not matching in terms of our values, in terms of where we are in life, in terms of our self-awareness. And so the important thing is becoming conscious of all the stuff. Right? Because Carl Jung, and I'm going to paraphrase him, but Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, said that until we make the subconscious conscious, we're gonna be at the effect of it, and we're gonna end up calling it fate. But it's all stuff. It's all unresolved issues from our past that we weren't able to deal with, and they're still running, and impacting all of our relationships and sabotaging our relationships. For example, say that, you know, which a lot of people have this experience. Say that the parents got divorced when we were at a young age, and you know, at that age, those young minds that didn't know any better, right? They didn't have the understanding about their parents, how they were raised, about how their parents before them were raised, what kind of relationships they learned about and was modeled by from generation to generation. We didn't know about their culture or the times. We didn't know about their intimate issues. We didn't know what was going on inside of their heads. Were there any abuse? Were there any chemical imbalances? At that age, we don't know any of that stuff. We just personalize it. We take it on. It's like, wow, how could mommy leave us? How could daddy leave me? Don't they love me? And then the deeper one is like the conclusion that we make on that, right? That the deeper one is like, well, what does it mean about me that they don't love me, right? What's wrong with me? And that stuff is so intense for such a young mind that we can't face it. So we suppress it. We stuff it. But that stuff doesn't go away, right? So it's been running, it's been impacting every one of our relationships ever since then. Because if we're bringing that into a relationship, there's something wrong with me, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, which we all had a variation of that at some point in our lives, and most of us still do. All that stuff is still impacting our behaviors. Because if we don't feel like we're worthy of love, if we don't feel we're good enough, that's all we're going to attract in return, something that's going to mirror that. And so talk about sabotaging our relationships.
Yeah, you're doing it before they're even sort of come together, haven't you? You've attracted the wrong one. Yeah, yeah. So if we're looking at the self-sabotaging, so we're aware that maybe with self-sabotaging, I've become aware that, okay, I'm using the word power and I'm looking at it as a negative way. What are the sort of the steps, or what do we do to get through this? So say somebody is attracting the same type of relationship constantly, what are some of the steps that they can look at, or what we can do to stop this self-sabotaging? And I guess awareness is one of the first ones, but, you know, how do we do this?
It is totally the first one. You nailed it. Like, we can't do anything about what we can't see. So the very first step is becoming aware of what we're doing. Why? What are the triggers? Why do we behave this way versus another way? Why do we have this certain kind of reaction? Why do we keep attracting the same kind of person for our relationship? Because sometimes it feels like it's the same boring movie. Might be a different lead, a different actor, but it's the same boring movie, the same kind of crap, the same kind of stuff coming up over and over again. So at some point, we got to get honest too, right? That's another important step, is getting real and honest and accepting that out of every one of our relationships and every one of the arguments that we've ever had in our life, there's one common denominator, and that's us, right? Yes. So why do we do the things we do? Why do we attract certain people? Why do we keep recreating this kind of pattern in relationships? And by becoming aware of it, then we can do something about it. And so another step might be understanding, you know, like this whole talking about power, understanding the differences between power, because that's part of the reason we're so confused about it. So you alluded to it earlier. So, you know, we tend to associate power with things that are external to us, things that are outside of us, fame, money, you know, somebody who's high up in some kind of a hierarchy, whether it's a corporate environment or nonprofit or religious organization. But all those things, because they're outside of us, they're here today, gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That kind of power, which I called ego power, egoic power, or worldly power, it's also always has an agenda. It's always trying to get something to itself. It's always trying to prove something. And it's always trying to blow itself up to seem bigger than it is. And we don't need to go very far in history to see political leaders who have all the money and all the power you could want, and they're so thin-skinned that you could tell from a distance how low their self-esteem is. And so, as in contrast to what I call soulful power or spiritual power, you know, and it's the kind of power that's inside each and everyone, and it doesn't have anything to prove to anybody. It's humble, right? And it's about service. It's about making a difference. So think about a Gandhi or a Gandalf, you know, in their simple monastic robe, their sandal feet. You would never know from looking at them how much power they hold until it's necessary. Then get out of the way. Get out of the way. Gandhi brought the British Empire to its knees when it was at its highest point in terms of global reach without ever landing a single punch or shooting a single gun. Talk about power.
Yeah, it's a difference, isn't it? So different. That internal power, it's amazing. All right, so we've been aware. We've got aware of our self-sabotaging. Like, I've gone, okay, power is one of those things that I've got this thing happening. So I'm aware of that self-sabotaging, and I need to connect with my own power, my own internal power, and flip it and see the difference. If somebody else was self-sabotaging about their relationships, the first thing is, like you said, awareness. So they've become aware of what it is. So they also need to connect with their internal power. Yes. What's our first way of doing that? What's a step that we can do that? And I know it's all in the book. I know you'll have it all in the book, but you'll have it all in detail in the book. We're just brushing over it here. But I'd like to know what the next step would be.
Well, understand, it's really important to understand the ways that we approach relationship, because we haven't been taught really how to approach relationships. So for example, if we're approaching relationship, which is totally connected to self-esteem and self-awareness and personal empowerment. So if we're approaching relationship, which most of the time, most of us are, right? It's like, you are going to make me happy, right? We kind of place all that expectation, all that responsibility, which isn't even fair to put on somebody else, right? You're going to make me happy. Yikes. That's a lot of responsibility. So if we're approaching relationships from that perspective, hang it up. Forget it. There isn't anybody out there that's going to make us happy. There isn't, right? Only we can do that. And so that is a huge step, right? Getting to that place where we realize that only we can make ourselves happy. And that's all related. It's all interrelated to self-love, self-acceptance, self-esteem, personal empowerment. It's all interrelated, because the greater our sense of self, the stronger, the deeper our self-acceptance and self-love, the less dependent that we are on anything external of outside of us. Like, we don't need anybody's validation. We have more of that strength, that inner power to say, to have clear boundaries, to be able to know and communicate, yeah, that works for me. Nope, that doesn't work for me. Instead of what we've done in the past, which is override it and put in a little smile inside, we're seething or we're like, what is wrong with this? And because we hate confrontation and conflict, we override it. And that doesn't work, because what used to be spiritual teaching, that everything is energy, now we know from quantum physics that everything is energy. So all that stuff that we suppress, every one of those times where we said yes and put on a fake smile when inside it was like, no, this is not okay with me. But for the sake of that illusion of peace, we override that. That stuff doesn't go away.
It catches up with you. It does catch up with you. I know that. Been there, done that.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
We've all done that.
You were talking about relationships, and the little thought popped into my head. Now, you're talking about the relationship and, that's right, about you need to make me happy if you're approaching a relationship like that. And at first I didn't quite understand what you meant, and then I sort of went, oh, okay. So if I'm approaching a person and I see this gorgeous-looking man there and I'm thinking, okay, he's got to make me happy.
Right.
And so basically,
it's not even that conscious thought. Like, we
just, I know.
Oh my God, that's the one. Inside, we're saying, there it is. That's the answer. That's the solution.
So you're looking at that and you're going, okay, well, you know, looking at that, you know, that's terrible. You know what I mean? You're looking at the potential partner and going, okay, this gentleman or this woman is going to make me happy. So that's how we're automatically approaching it. That's self-sabotaging.
Totally.
How do we approach it when we don't want to self-sabotage?
Totally.
Yeah.
First step, it's nobody's going to make us happy. Right? And it's not their job to, and how unfair to put that responsibility on somebody else. Right? Only we can make ourselves happy. So we're talking about ultimate personal responsibility here. So that in and of itself is huge. That changes the game. Because that takes the unconscious, it's almost like survival level stuff that we have, all so much weight that we put on that relationship working out. And then add to that all the layers of conditioning, like, you know, till death do us part. And if that's not the case, then we label the relationship a failure. A failed relationship is like, wait a minute. Like, I don't agree with that. I don't subscribe to that belief. From my perspective, as long as we're growing, as long as we're becoming better, more compassionate human beings, it doesn't matter whether the relationship lasted a year or a lifetime. It's because our fulfillment doesn't depend on that. Relationships are great. You know, that like falling in love is like one of the best feelings like of the human experience. But then, I mean, that's a whole other conversation, another whole rabbit hole. What is love? Is it the emotion, or what is it if it's not that? But once we get to the point, like, the relationship is great. It's added value, right, to life. But our happiness, our fulfillment doesn't come from that.
That's what I wanted. It's added value, isn't it? It's so they're not there to make us happy or create our happiness. They're there for to enjoy our happiness that we have already got.
Yes, and to share this amazing experience of embodiment, all the pleasure that comes from that. And if we want to do them consciously, if we want to do our relationships consciously, they can really speed up our process of transformation. Because if you want to shine a light, if you want to discover, you know, those blind spots that are back here that we're never going to see. Because, you know, if I'm looking at that mirror in front of me, it's back there. If I turn to the to look at that mirror, now it's going the other way. I'm never going to see it here, but I can see it in you. So, you know, that's the whole thing about projection. If it's there, it's here. So if we put, even put that little simple practice into our relationships, it'll speed up our process of learning, because the ego mind is so good about pointing the finger and blaming and holding the other one responsible and holding on to being right. And the ego appoints itself a judge, jury, prosecutor, all into one. It knows exactly what the other person did was wrong, what the punishment should be, and delivers it all into one. If we're willing, like sometimes I think the Dalai Lama has it easy being celibate. You know, because if you want to shine a light on those blind spots, get in relationship. Because we're so good about finding each other's buttons and pressing them. And if we do relationships unconsciously, which means pointing the finger, blaming them, then we don't grow, right? And but if we like turn that mirror around and start use that mirror to look at ourselves, like, how do I do that? It might look completely different, but if I'm, especially when I'm seeing a pattern of say being cheated on or whatever, of betrayal, it's like, guaranteed that we're doing that in some way, and most likely in relationship to self.
Yeah, I totally agree. One of the things that I've always believed in a relationship is you need two people, at least two people, to have a relationship, mm-hmm. Which means that there's two areas there that can go wrong. You can't just keep going, you're doing this, you're doing that, stop doing that, stop, because you've got to be looking at your involvement in it. So it's never ever 100% somebody's fault. Even if the other person has actually gone and had an affair or something to that effect, it's never ever 100% that person's fault. It takes two to tango, and it takes two to have a relationship, and it takes two to break them down.
Yeah, for sure. No question.
So that's really interesting. So to defeat these self-sabotaging behaviors, obviously the first thing we need to do is see where the finger's pointing, which is really the three of them coming back at me.
Exactly.
Isn't that what they say? Where you're pointing, it's coming back at me. So we've got to really look more at ourselves. We've got to awaken that power within us, that soul power within us, and bring that out, which is...
Yeah.
What your book's all about.
Exactly. And let me give you this story because it really helps. Sometimes this seems like it's really literal, like how am I doing what they're doing? But it can be really subtle. Like, I'm gonna give you this example. When some years ago when I had ended a 7-year relationship, I moved to a different city and I started seeing somebody. I wasn't anywhere near ready to be in relationship again. And I was very upfront. And I knew that it wasn't a match, you know, in terms of self-awareness, in terms of, you know, values and where we were in life and all that stuff. But, you know, it's like it was what it was. It was great, amazing, hot and passionate and heart connected sex. And that's what everybody wanted. That's what nobody wanted more than that. And suddenly disappeared, like missed several appointments. We're getting together several points, nothing, no email, no phone call or nothing. And I didn't get it, right? I was focused on them. Like, what's going on over there? Call them at work and it's like not working there anymore. So what's going on? Is it drugs? Is there alcohol? I didn't get it, right? Because I was focused over there. But so then I had to subconsciously, of course, create a different drama in a different part of my life. So I was flying to New York to meet with a literary agent that I was working with at the time. And she was great about communication. She'd get back to me within 24, at most 48 hours. A week goes by and I haven't heard from her. Like, now it got my attention, right? Because we're doing similar things, right? Two people unrelated from different walks of life doing pretty much the same thing, right? But because it's a blind spot, I had to get clear first about what they were doing, right? So what were they doing? They weren't showing up. Mm-hmm. They weren't doing what they said they would do. They weren't keeping their agreement. They weren't, and because of all that, they were out of integrity, right? I can see it clearly there. Oh, right. How am I doing that, right? Turning that mirror around. Yeah. Crap. I didn't want to have to do that work, right? And it took me a few days to figure it out because I started like doing relationship, different relationships. Am I showing up? Yeah. Am I keeping my word? Yeah. Am I doing what I said I would do? Yeah. Right. And then it hit me in relationship to my writing. Like, and I was working on this book, and it, which it probably took me like 10 years to write this book. It took the pandemic for me to set my butt down and get it out of my head, and onto page. So I was doing the same thing, but not with another human being. I wasn't showing up for my writing. I wasn't keeping my agreements with myself about my deadlines, right? And I wasn't like even renegotiating. I wasn't saying to myself, right, I'm gonna let's extend it another month. I was just like, blah, 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 you know, going through life, doing another retreat, another workshop, all great stuff, but I wasn't showing up. I was out of integrity in this area of my life. And so the minute this is the beautiful way about doing life consciously, because I'm not exaggerating, Susan, within an hour of me having that insight and like, oh my God, I was doing the same thing. Like within an hour, they both called. Like no longer did I need to create this external drama so that I would see that I was not keeping my agreement with myself in this area. It's amazing how that works.
That is just too many aha moments in my head happening now. Exactly what you're talking about is happening to me now. Not so much with relationships, but it's like, why isn't that happening? Why isn't that going? Why? When I just saw your hand go like that, I thought, wow, how symbolic is that? Because then I just did mine too, and it's like, okay, yeah, I was supposed to be writing my second book. It was like I'm supposed to be listening to this because my second book is there. It's half done. Rara, I keep getting told I've got to get it done. And, yeah, there's so many other bright, shiny objects around here that it's not been done. So I get exactly what you're talking about. And that is such a great skill because you've acknowledged that they're doing this and they're doing that. And often you have to get it from two different places, don't you?
Yes. Yeah.
You get it from there and then you get it from there. And then it's like, well, okay, what's the connection there? Flip it around, have a look at yourself, and you will get the understanding. I love, Christian, that is amazing. That is really good information. And you'll get that in his book. So it's called, again, Awakening the Soul Power. Get onto it. You'll love this. And you can get it on Amazon.
Yeah.
But Christian, we're running out of time now. I need you to give me one last little tidbit. Anything you want to share before we go?
Well, I just wanted to say that the book is all in the book, and it'll walk you by the hand, and it's very doable. I wanted to thank you. I wanted to thank you for doing the work that you do, for your willingness to have a podcast like this, because I know that in your willingness to do that, that many, many lives are being touched and impacted, and especially, Susan, with the honesty. That's one of the things that I look for in a credible coach or a credible teacher, is somebody who's still doing their work, right? Because it is ongoing. So thank you. Thank you for all that.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely, my pleasure. And I'm sure the guests would have loved listening to that because it is real. It is real. It's down to earth. And I love that story at the end. It was just so, it makes sense. It just really makes sense. And that's what it's all about. But we do need to go. Thank you so much for being on the show. Stay online because we have to take the photo ready for, you know, social media and all the rest of it. As you do. And I will just do the closing. So thank you again, Christian. That was wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Oh, that guys, grab the book. It is really, really good. And then have a look at the podcast. The website. You'll really, really like it. But all the links are going to be down underneath anyway, so you can do that. As I go at the very end, you know, subscribe, tick like, share, whatever you have to do, all those social media stuff. But be true to yourself and have a great week. And I will say bye for now and see you next week. Okay, bye.